Hi, this is Hugh Greenwood from the North Melbourne Footy Club, and you're listening to another episode of the Hashtag Kangaroos podcast. Here is your host, Dean Masich.
Welcome to another episode. My name is Dean Vasek. You can find me on X at hashtag Kangas, Instagram hashtag Kangaroos Podcast, TikTok hashtag Kangaroos One. So tonight I welcome back AFLW regular Claire Cozzi to review our very impressive win against the Fremantle Dockers last night over in the West by 45 points, a comprehensive win. Tali Randall kicking 5 goals, Kate Shuler chipping in with a couple, a lot of great individual performances. And a lot to like, a lot of positives. We also touched on the men's. We had Brady Rawlings on Trade Radio today, so he talked for a couple of minutes, so there was lots to go through there. Is he scaring the shit out of me? A little bit with the trade period, just based a little bit on previous history. So there was a bit to talk about there. So let's not waste any more of your valuable time. Bring on Claire to talk about it.
Claire Cozzi, welcome back on a winning Monday. A great comprehensive win by the girls in hot conditions in Perth yesterday. 45-point winners and a lot to like. Flag Ruse is back on again.
Yeah, we're back. We're back, baby. Flag Ruse, living the dream. We had a bit of a bump in the road, I think, when we reversed Brisbane down the fortress. And then I think the game against GWS, I think, burn the tape. We don't have to watch that. But after the comprehensive win on the road, we're back. We're back on the Flag Ruse train and we're feeling good. Very important win. I think it's a confidence booster. I really like that the club invested the time and effort to send the group over. I think they were there for the majority of the weekend. And I think that's really important for team bonding and acclimatising yourself to the time change, I guess, and the conditions. So good by the club to do that. I know not all clubs. Sometimes they just chuck them on a red eye on the same day. So that was great. It was a really good. I was a bit nervous in the first half, but I think the second half was quite emphatic with the response that they had. So yeah, very, very, very good game. How do you see it, Dean?
Yeah, like similar to you, I was a little worried early. Not sure about you, but I thought we were wasting our chances. A lot of hoof ball into our forward 50, particularly in the first half. And O'Driscoll was just intercepting everything. The Dockers were lucky they had her, otherwise it would have been a big smashing. As the game went on, we seemed to lower our eyes a lot more and found our forwards in a lot more space. I mean, Fremantle dropped a lot of numbers back, and that's a taxing way to play a game. I caught up with them in the end, especially if you're behind, because there's no way you're going to make up that sort of margin if you are playing 13 players behind the ball. Talia Randall kicking straight was great reward as well. That, to me, scares the opposition now if she's kicking straight. The pressure from the smalls as well, in particular Lisa Lachlan, was outstanding. The midfield, to me, is still the best in the comp. No weaknesses there. Jenna back as well with Garner, Riddell and Mia King. You're talking about the best four players inside top 20 to 30 players in the comp. Loving the way we're tracking them, and we go above the D's, who copped a surprise to the Crows on the weekend as well, which is good to see.
Yeah, it's good to see, I guess, looking at that game, that I think for the competition it's good to know that they are beatable. And that's a bit of a mental climb now that teams looking at and say we can pick them off. Adelaide have done it. They've done it at their home ground at Casey Fields as well. So there are chinks in that armour. Going back to our game, I think I was really impressed. I was impressed with the tools of Sheila and Randall because I think they kicked clutch goals at really superb moments of the game. But it was also really good to see in the second half North mids lower their eyes and sort of find space and kick to the fat side and allow our smalls like Bella Eddy, Alisa Lachlan to get involved. Even the chain of play, I think, outside our defensive 50 to move the ball from end to end and create a bit of space as well. That was really good. My favourite passage of the play, though, has to go down to Amy Smith, who's probably becoming, I say this every week, Dean, but probably becoming one of my favourite players in regards to her work rate. So Amy's time on ground, I think, was at around 76%. She was out in the wing and played across the half forward. And there's the passage of play that ends up being an Aliso Lock and goal because of the pressure they put on her. And she is at every contest and every chain, just a tackling, applying pressure, moving the ball forward. And it was just amazing to see. And those stats don't really get on the board, but you can imagine after that game, you know, Darren Crocker going to her and saying, you know, these one percenters are the reason why we have opportunities on goal and we're able to convert. So that was amazing to see. I was actually really happy to see little Ruby Tripodi spend some time in the middle. I don't know whether you caught that, but she was having a run in the midfield, which, you know, when you have the luxury of Garner, Riddell, Mia King and Bruton, you can afford to, you know, maybe chuck Bruton on the bench for a little bit and get Tripodi in there. And I think that's really great for her skill set to kind of learn. I thought Taylor Gatt is improving week upon week. I think I really like her out in the wing. It's hard to believe that she's still just a teenager. Like, she just plays the game with such composure. I think O'Shea is really stepping up in the replacement of Bresnahan. I think she's using her run and carry across the halfback line really well and opening up their game with her speed. Ferguson are right. I mean, they don't do anything wrong, do they? They conceded only 19 points for the entire game and didn't concede a goal after halftime. I think it was just 2 points they were able to concede. Complete dominance. But my only issue with Riddell, like, I love her, but I feel like she's stealing votes from Garner. Like, I think the AFLW awards, I think they might be sitting next to each other. It'll be kind of like a Petrarca and Viney situation where one of them might steal it from the other. But a very complete performance, very exciting to watch. And like you said, if Shearlaw's not kicking goals or King is, you've always got to worry about one of them. Like, Randall will pop up. So it's a real big statement to the rest of the league and a really important win on the road. So it was a nice time to be a North Melbourne supporter on Sunday night. I'm not used to that, Dean, because normally on 4:40 on a Sunday, I'm catching a train home from Etihad Stadium after losing to 32 points to, like, I don't know, Gold Coast Suns or someone. So it was actually nice to be in a winning position.
Yeah, especially at three-quarter time. It's actually nice because you know the game's out of reach. I mean, we're 20-odd points in front. It's just about the margin. We're not going to lose from there. It's not just nice to chill back, relax, and watch and enjoy the last quarter because you know you're going to win. So, and you sort of see, yeah, you know, like right at the end, I mean, how good was it to see Talia Randall get that goal to get her fifth goal for the game? And just, yeah, nice passages of play, you know, that where I think Taylor get one a ball in the middle, handball to Shearlaw, who seems pretty quick when she's got the football in hand. Not as quick when ball chasing. So yeah, they couldn't catch her. No one could catch her.
I saw she had a couple of bounces as well. She really backed herself in. So I saw. Yeah. I think as soon as the goals are open, her eyes light up. But you know, it doesn't really work that way when she's doing a defensive running. I'm being very harsh on her, but she's obviously had a great game. But we did speak on off air about how sometimes the tools can be a liability because we know Driscoll obviously had a great game and we know that teams that we've seen it at GWS, we've seen it against Carlton, you know, they do park the bus against North and it kind of makes it really frustrating when you have such a massive differential in the key set of inside 50s and you look at it and you see what you've converted from it. But it's just sort of being very patient and understanding the game will break open and they will fatigue and the wall will collapse. It's just that North have to kind of be persistent and understand how to create the space and create movement and scoring opportunities, you know, when the whole of Fremantle's team is parked in the forward 50. So good times.
Yeah, no injuries as well, which is always a bonus. Yeah. The only concern that looked like an injury that might happen was when Jazz Ferguson was doing an interview at halftime and almost tripped over the cables when she was doing an interview. Yeah, I was thinking, oh, well, what are they doing? Like, they lifted the cable when she was trying to hurdle it and she almost tripped
them. I literally did see that as well. And I was like, if something's happened here, I'll be, you know, do we sue Fox? Or
yeah, I would be.
What's the liability there? Very handy, I think. It's good to get the 4 points. It's good to get percentage, but it's also really important to be healthy. We know we're getting to the pointy end now. It'd be amazing to have Brej back. And from all the kind of videos and content that the club's put out about her, I think she's raring and she's training really well and trying to get back out there. So it's important to have a healthy list come finals. So things are all looking on the up.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, we'll go to the back line. I'm really like O'Shea at the moment. She's playing a good lockdown role and giving us drive out of that back half. She's caught quite quick at breaking lines and got a good drop punt, you know, very long penetrating kick. She has picked up the game quite well, considering she's only been playing it for, I don't know, effectively probably 4 or 5 months.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. Obviously, the Gaelic background helps. She kind of reminds you of a bit of a whippet. She's got those whippet energy where she burns you off and runs and carries. And I think, like I said, she's done a really good job in replacing that kind of run and carry that Brej provides. And I think that speaks volumes of the unit, that defensive unit. And, you know, obviously Tess Craven's been filling down their back as well. And I think because that defensive unit's so tight and they understand their role and they back each other in, I think that support carries over. And I think O'Shea has license to kind of burn off. And Crocker and Carney have told her, mate, once you get the ball in hand, there's not many people can catch you. We know the distance and the territory you can take with the ball. I'd say, you know, 6 to 7 times out of 10, you could find a high forward on the wing, or you'd back our mids to win a stoppage and push the ball forward. So it's a good play. I'll be fascinated to see whether or not against clubs like Melbourne and Adelaide, whether or not they do a bit more homework into that. But I think she's done really, really well. I think she's the real success story of those Irish recruits. Obviously, there's heaps in the game now. I'm thinking of, like, you know, Sarah Rowe at Collingwood, and I know Melbourne have got a couple of Irish players themselves, and I think they've got the natural run and carry of Gaelic and mixing that with AFL has worked really well. So the experiment's working for now, which is great.
Yeah, I mean, just on Eric O'Shea, yeah, 14 disposals and 324 metres gained in those 14 disposals is quite good. It's quite strong. Now, we talked off air, the midfield. Now, you're a bit worried that Ash Riddell is taking votes away from Jasmine Garner. I mean, she's had a very underrated year, Ash Riddell, and she's getting overshadowed a little bit by Jasmine Garner at the moment, because obviously everything she does goes to gold, whereas Ash Riddell does dirty work a bit, doesn't she?
Yeah, she's a roll-your-sleeves-up kind of player. And look, this is not the worst problem to have when you've got some of the two best mids in the league. Can't say that that's something I've experienced with the men's in a while. So, look, it's good. It's good to be in this position. It's good to have an inside midfielder. She's very tough at the contest. She's always in the coalface getting the ball out and ideally getting into the hands of Garner. But even the beautiful kind of tap situation is that she'll often play a sweeper role. So if, you know, we get the first hands of the ball, often it will be, you know, Rennie or King straight to Garner, and then Garner handballs out to Ash, and she kind of burns everyone off to do the forward 50 entry. Because I do think Ash has just a little bit more pace than Garner in terms of speed around the ground. I felt bad for her because when she had that set shot on goal, I thought, oh, wow, she's probably, if she goes on with this here and kicks a goal, she's probably got the 10 votes. And I don't want to say that I mozzed her because I didn't. I was hoping that she got the goal. But in my head, I was just like, oh, I kind of want Garner to get the 10 AFLW votes so she gets the best of fairest. But nah, Ash is very, I think, one of the hardest workers at the club. I think she's always winning time trials. She's a natural runner. She's a natural, I guess, that you to play in that midfield with Mia King, with Garner, with Bruton, you've got to have a high work ethic, because, you know, when you come into training, you're putting your mouth guard on and you're versing, you know, some of the, like, each other, some of the best mids in the league. So she's only got better with time. And I guess it's hard to believe, Dean, that she was overlooked in so many drafts, that she's gone so underrated. And it's credit to, you know, Scotty Gowans when he was at Melbourne Uni to get her across and play there, and North could draft her. So, you know, I guess one man's trash is another man's treasure with Ash Riddell, which is a great story for her and for North Melbourne Football Club.
Oh, definitely, 100%. And, yeah, I mean, they've got a good partnership, all of them there, Jenna. Jazz, yeah, Riddell, and Mia King as well. They've all got a good partnership, and they all work well together. I mean, Mia King, I think she's got, I think every game this year she's had double figures in tackles or close to it. So,
yeah,
she works well.
She's just a bulldog at the contest, isn't she? She just throws her body around so much, and you forget it, and you look at her, and you sort of think, you've got, you know, 25 possessions today, but you're up for 16 tackles. Like, it's insane. You know, like, she's just, she's a very, very worth, I guess, you know, if Garner's role is the composure and Ash is to, you know, feed the ball out, I guess King's is to apply that, um, that cold face pressure and the tackling and the contested sort of ball as well. So it's a really nice unit. That group, I think, works really well together. And I guess it was really pleasing on the weekend to not only, you know, see that work really well and the synergy of that group, but when you chuck a young little Ruby Tripodi in for a couple of minutes and see how she goes, what a benefit to us to be able to do that, that we know that we can sort of back ourselves in that, you know, if she's learning on the fly, that we still have a pretty tight midfield group. And I noticed even at the contest, North would sort of sacrifice and go in, it'd be kind of 4-3 at the stoppages and we'd still win and we'd still clear the ball. And, you know, that's a sign of a fairly good mid group if you're able to go 4-3 and still take advantage with territory and with possession. So yeah, they're a pretty superb mid group. I haven't watched too much of, I mean, I know Hatchard and Ebony Marinoff had a pretty sublime weekend as well for the Crows. So I think coming towards the next couple of weeks, I'll probably put a little bit more homework into watching Melbourne and Adelaide and see how their midfields work and how they're going to stack up against ours, because I know we've got them, I think, round 8 and 9, so back-to-back. But no, look, Mia King's a gun. That midfield group is only getting better, and the more time that they spend with each other, like you said, it strengthens their, I guess, their synergy as a group, which is good to see.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Fremantle didn't have Kiara Bowers, and I found it strange how they used Hayley Miller as well. The commentator said she had a hand injury, so she couldn't play midfield, and she went forward in the third and did nothing. But then when the game was out of reach at the start of the fourth, they put her back in the midfield. I found it bizarre tactics.
Yeah, I did too. I didn't understand what they were kind of doing with her. I didn't know. It seemed like they just didn't know whether they were Arthur Martha or Plartha. They just had no idea with what to do. I think if she is injured or she's carrying something, then it wasn't strategically not the best call by Freo. And I know Kiara Bowers is a huge out, but I was pretty disappointed with Freo's other key matchups. I didn't think I know Antonio got a good goal, but she was pretty quiet for a leader of the team. I thought that Gabby O'Sullivan, who plays really well, I think she could have done a bit more. I just, apart from Driscoll and a couple of their defensive players, I think Freo were pretty lackluster across the field. I don't think they'd go into the review room and have too many highlights. I think there's a lot of work to be done at that footy club.
Yeah, definitely. Any concerns for you out of the game? I mean, we had 40, I'm just looking now, I think it was 48 inside 50s and 16 scoring shots out of that. We did talk about second half, we lowered our eyes, but is that forward line still a concern for you?
It's not so much of a concern as it is, I guess, the persistence, because there's a pattern now that suggests that if you're going to play North and if you're going to play Park the Bus, that's fine and it will work up until a certain point, but the dam wall does break open. And, you know, making sure that you engage the small forwards like Eddie, Elise, and I think Tess Craven copped a arduous, a very contentious 50. I thought it was a bit harsh, but she got on the board as well. But I think in the second half, we were able to capitalize on using different forwards as opposed to always kind of going for the big kind of clunk mark. Look, it's very frustrating watching it in live time to see how much of the ball is down there and for us not to convert. But you do have to remember, looking at the time on ground, a lot of our small key forwards like Gavalis, who else did I mention? Eddie, Elise, Tripodi even. They don't actually spend as much time on ground as our defenders don't rotate. So Jazzy and Sarah Wright don't move for the entire game. I think Randall had very minimal time off the ground. So I think it's just understanding our forward entries and bring the ball to ground or making sure that if we are entering forward 50 and the ball's going to be in a situation where it could be a contest, what do we do to drag up our midfield and try to keep the ball in and try and get some scoring opportunity for it? Because I think players like Ashley Dowell, like she had a set shot on goal as well. She was able to drag, I think, a free kick. So I wouldn't use the word concerning. It's frustrating in real time to watch it, but I think it's just the patience of knowing that it will break open. You just have to wait. Like we saw with the Carlton game, with the GWS game, and now with the Freo game, it's just a matter of time until we convert. How do you see it?
Yeah, I mean, there are occasions where it does look a bit top heavy, and when the ball hits the ground, it seems to go out of there sometimes a little bit too quick. That's something we've still got to work on. I thought, second half was a lot better when we did lower our eyes and just put the ball into space. And we were a bit more patient with the football. There's a lot of times let's just get it in, hoof it quickly.
Yeah.
And O'Driscoll seemed to read it so easily for periods of time. So it's about learning. There's always that concern, going back to that prelim last year where we're going to do it again in a game.
So, 100%. It gives you flashbacks. And I also think there were some times where they've gone to Randall and it's 3v1. Yeah. Or they've gone to Sheila and it's a 2v1. And then they're free. I've got some people at the ball drop. So it's just about reading the numbers or instead of bombing away in forward 50, it's kind of setting up a passage of play. And you don't have to always get Randall or Sheila or King, 20 out or 10 out from goal. You could go something a little bit deeper and back Gavalis to kick it 30 metres out on an angle as well. So it's just having different angles and different kind of distances to goal and not always resorting to the bomb kick forward. So, easier said than done when you're working in a telephone box. Like obviously there were times of the game where you couldn't move. There was just no space for our small forwards or even our tools to kind of move in it. So yeah, I guess it's just about practicing, being able, Bella Eddie, kicking goals from 40 out in a slight angle as opposed to having to, and then, having Riddell and Garner kick a short little chip and kind of pull some weight off the ball and some territory and hitting a target that's, 30 out instead of 20 out as well. So, not concerns as much as just things that I guess need to be tidied up. And we've probably said that from round one. We know that our forward entries aren't the best considering how many we do get in there as opposed to how many we convert. But I guess it's not the worst problem to have in the world when you're beating teams by 45 points. So,
100%. Yeah, I mean, we've kind of set the bar pretty high. We've knocked off Carlton, and this probably says something about the competition and the fixture that Carlton are sixth on the ladder at the moment because they're not a sixth place team. And, it's just the way it is at the moment. It's just the way of the fixture. Because, I certainly wouldn't mind playing them in a final if we got them.
Yeah. Well, that's it. It's the compromise league. It's essentially at this stage nearly two tiers of a system. And, I think I even said on Twitter, we've obliterated Carlton. We're on this. I know we hadn't played our game yet, but we were 16 points each, four wins. And we, two rounds ago, we took them by 10 goals. It's just such a crazy compromised fixture. And I think if you look at it, Melbourne have a slightly interesting run home and who they get to play. And I don't know. I guess that, like we said against the GWS game, is that you have high expectations because you know how important percentage is. And that's the same coming into the Port Adelaide game this Sunday at Arden Street. Yes, I want to win and I want the 4 points, but I know how important it is to not concede goals. And I know how important it is that we have to keep on building a percentage if we want to remain as a top two type side. So, it's quite hard because I also know that D's have got, West Coast over at Mineral Park over there. So I can imagine they'll try to do some damage and increase their percentage. So it's one thing, I guess, Dean, to want to win, but it's another knowing how complex it is and how fine it's going to get when it comes down to percentage towards finals time and how big of an impact that's going to make.
No, definitely, yeah. And we'll look at it later. Adelaide Crows, percentage of 226, North Melbourne, 278, Melbourne, 239, Brisbane, 162. It's a four-horse race, effectively.
Yeah. I tell you, speaking of Brisbane, though, they dropped the ball, didn't they, on Saturday? They don't play well up on their own home ground. It's pretty crazy. I don't understand them as a football club. It was very, very odd. Did you watch any of the game?
I've seen bits of it. Yeah, I was a little bit surprised how they were going. But, I thought they were pretty lucky to, I don't know what happened to us against them in the second half where we dropped, we seemed to drop the ball in the second half.
And,
especially when they didn't have, the name escapes me.
Dakota.
Dakota. But they didn't kick straight either. Like it was 3-5-3. It was a, I mean, 9 times out of 10, you're going to win those types of games. So yeah, look, it's not a bad thing.
Yeah, good for us.
Because I'd like to keep him, out of that contention for, a second or third spot. Because there's, I mean, there's a possibility. I don't know if we can beat Melbourne and Adelaide 2 weeks in a row. That's going to be a lot to ask. So it probably puts us in a box seat to finish above them, so we don't have to travel over there.
Yeah, 100%. That's exactly what I was thinking. But then I was thinking, I mean, surely they played at Arden Street as their home final. Surely. But then I was also like, I don't know what their contract is with Tassie. I know that we played Punt Road against Richmond and then Icon against Melbourne. But yeah, surely, I mean, you'd say that we played at Arden Street for the final, fingers crossed. But yeah, look, probably getting a little ahead of ourselves, locking in a prelim spot with a couple of rounds to go. But yeah, just very interesting. I just watched it. The thing that I got out of it, that game on Saturday night, was that I was very happy that Collingwood were able to jump them and keep us in contention. But then I was also, like you, I sort of was like, how do we lose against these guys? Like, we're a better team. We are just a better team. And I just feel like we missed a chance go by. And I think that only reiterates how important at least one win against Dees or Adelaide. Like, we just have to get one between two is what we need. I mean, ideally two. But we need to get one of those wins, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. Look, even look at Geelong now. They've probably fallen away since they've played up. They were a big chance to knock us off. I think they've three goals up at half time or something close to that. And, we ended up overrunning them in the second half. But you look at them now. They lost to Essendon on the weekend. They didn't look like half the team they have. And I think the Melbourne game really dented their confidence and belief in themselves because, they're struggling for a final spot at the moment. They're in no position. So,
they've really bundled out, haven't they? Because I watched the Essendon and Collingwood game and I thought Essendon were no chop. Like, they just seemed to, be all over the place. And then they go all the way to Warrnambool and, Cats just, I'll be fascinated whether or not they continue to do that country round, Essendon and Geelong. I know it benefits Essendon, but I don't know whether Geelong like it too much. I think they'd much prefer to have it at GMHBA Stadium. But, they've fallen off quite a bit. And then I don't know what to make of the Pies. Like, they've beaten, Brisbane are half decent and Essendon now. So I don't know whether they're getting better or if something's happening there. I guess there's the middle tier of the competition from anywhere from about maybe fifth all the way to 14th. It's a bit of an open slather, Who knows what'll happen. I know Gold Coast got that. Did you watch that the final play? That was crazy.
I didn't think she was going to make the distance, but
neither did I.
But she kicked at 50 plus, and it was only the accuracy that was in question at the end. But just snuck it in for a behind. So that was I did enjoy that finish. That was
I thought it was quite theatrical. And I think when you look at AFLW and you look at how far it's come, I actually think that's a really good passage of play to have the nous and understanding the awareness of the game. You've got to go back and you've got to have some composure about it. And I reckon 7 years ago. Like, I don't reckon an AFLW player kicks that, unless they're maybe Caitlin Greiser or a really big hoof of the boot. But she went back and, yes, it wasn't a goal as such, but she knew enough about the game to understand it would chew enough time up. So I just thought it was a really good highlight, I guess, of how far we've come in AFLW and how we can still have really entertaining games. And, yes, they're not as high scoring as maybe people would like them to be, but quite a theatrical finish and quite a pretty decent round of AFLW. I mean, North kind of blew it out in terms of their game against Freo, but quite a competitive round, which is really good to see. I think it makes the competition a lot more interesting when you know your team could potentially get up.
Yeah, definitely. It's still, it's getting better. Wish the AFL would invest a little bit more into it. But we move forward to the Port Power on Sunday. Now, another game, and the expectation is that we want to win and win well. We seem to struggle when that is an expectation, but what are you hoping for, Claire, this Sunday?
Oh, I mean, yeah, I, I keep on doing this to ourselves. It's like the Frio game. I had no expectations. I just wanted to get away with the 4 points, and they exceeded my expectations. So I think a 5-goal win, I think, is probably a pretty, you know, middle to low bar to set. I think it's important not to concede too many as well. We know how that can kind of hit the percentage. I wouldn't mind seeing Capote do some more minutes in the midfield. I think that's really interesting. I really find it fascinating there, her just kind of learning her craft. Be good to see maybe Sheila or King get on the end of a bag, or it'd probably be even better if it was a small forward. Like, I wouldn't mind if an Elise or a Belletti kick three. Wouldn't mind seeing Ali Gavalis maybe get a little bit more into it. I'm hesitant to say that she's not the same player as she was previous to her injury last season, but I don't know. I really like Ali Gavalis. I don't like how they kept on calling her. They kept on calling her something else in the game.
Yeah, I can't remember.
Gavalis or something like that. Yeah, and I was just like, you know, do your homework, Will Schofield. Do your homework. I think she's a little. I wouldn't mind her having a really good game, just to build a bit of confidence. She seems just a bit, I don't know, off the pace. It's probably pretty critical for me to say that. She's still a very good player, but I wouldn't mind her having a really big game as a kind of a confidence builder leading into the week after, to the next week against the D's. Obviously, injury-free, unscathed. And I guess, yeah, building on the momentum of a really good away win. Be good to see. Maybe, I was just trying to say, it's probably going to be unchanged. Be good to see Tess Craven. I think she's doing holding up pretty well in that back line. I know she's not got the, I think she was only on 48% in terms of time on ground, but, you know, it'd be good to see her get the ball in her hands when she does have it. I think she can be quite classy with it. So, yeah, I reckon I'm setting a small bar. I'm setting a 5-goal win, but I'm also setting the bar of not conceding over maybe 3 goals is the goal. What's your expectation for the weekend, Dean?
Yeah, probably similar. Like, yeah, I mean, as long as the process and the system is still in place, it can be tricky. I mean, we don't know. Port Adelaide might just park the bus again, and we might struggle with that a little bit to get a really big score. But, as long as we don't continue, like you said, and like the dog's talking as well.
Yeah,
so,
He's saying you should have high expectations. They're going to win by 7, I think is what he was saying.
Yeah, that'd be good. Just on Ali Gavalis, she hasn't kicked a goal this year either, so I think she's kicked 3 behind. So that's something she's probably going to start hitting the scoreboard a little bit. She's getting a few tackles, which is nice, and trying to put the pressure on. But, probably the one player that's probably a little bit out of form. Hopefully, we can get a bit of form into her as well. So, look, I don't think the result's going to be in any doubt, but, I sort of hate these kind of games. So,
I hate them. I'd rather fast forward to the D's next week.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that one.
Feel as bad as it sounds, and I don't mean any disrespect to Port Adelaide, but it just feels like you're just kind of like treading water. Like, obviously, it'll be good to get to Arden Street and support and get around them, but it just feels like I just want to get to round 8. Like, I just want to crack. I just want to see where we're at, what we need to do, how we match up against kind of the best. So, I don't know. I'm just in a weird headspace. Like, I'd like to see, you know, like, it's good to see Gat build. It's good to see O'Shea build. It's good to see Amy Smith, and they're getting better week by week. But it all just feels like a little bit of a warm-up heading towards 8 and 9 at the moment. So, like you said, it's getting the structures right. It's getting the systems right. I guess it's also even just testing. I know they've got a couple of small forwards. Ewings, I think her name is. She's this beautiful little small forward that can get out of the back. So it's maybe looking at how to, I guess, shut down speed, because I know Adelaide and Melbourne have some speedsters in their forward line. So I guess it's applying strategies and ideas of what we might do against top two sides, against Port. But it'll be nice to be back in Arden Street. So I think it's 1 o'clock game, is it?
I believe so. Don't quote me. I'll have a look now for you, Claire. So, yeah, it is. It should be 105, I think. So I'll just go to fixture now. I'm just coming up the page. So this is great podcasting for the listeners. 105 Arden Street on a Sunday. So get behind it. So we're paying $1 on sports.
Yeah. I hate being... Like, I mean, we're favourites against Freo. We've gone in favourites most games, to be fair. But $1, that doesn't leave much leeway, does it?
No, you wouldn't put $1 on.
No, what's Port at the moment then? What are they putting out? Wow. Okay.
Yeah,
Look, that's probably what the men's would be if it was us versus Pies round one. So, you know what, the shoe's definitely on the other foot very quickly. So, with all due respect, looking for is Erin Phillips running around? Did she play last game?
I mean, that's a good question. I think she played the week before when they won. She kicked the
win. I saw that. Yeah, it was class.
I didn't see their game against the Swans. I might have seen a couple of seconds of it, but
I didn't see the game as well. I mean, I think the Swans are coming along nicely
definitely.
They're traveling quite well. So
She did play last game. Yeah. 17 disposals.
Look, even at obviously North supporters get around their team, but I reckon having a look at Erin Phillips from the sidelines of Arden Street's not the worst way to spend a Saturday as well. I think she's a phenomenal kind of gift to the game and what she's been able to know. I don't know if she's towards the back end of her career, but, seeing it live is always interesting. And I personally believe that Jazzy Garner's the GOAT, but there's people out there that say that, Erin Phillips is. So, we could be treated to some Garner versus Phillips at some stage of the game, potentially, and that's something to get around. But, yeah, I think ideally unscathed, don't concede too many goals and win by about 5 to 6 goals on the weekend, I think would be a very good result for North Melbourne.
Yeah, I think if Erin Phillips is going to play on Jasmine Garner, she should give her a torch because she'll be passing on a torch.
That's a good one. Yeah, that's actually, from one champion into another. Yeah, what Erin's been able to give the game in its inaugural kind of years was just unmatched with her ability to own the football ground, and I feel like Jazzy's at that stage now. So, what doesn't happen actually often in AFL, I don't think I've seen it in AFLW. I would 100% be changing, my playing jumper after the game. I'd 100% be going up to Erin Phillips and saying, "Hey, do you mind? I'd just like this in my pool room." That'd be great because I feel like if I was playing with really good players, even Ebin Marinoff, I'd go to her after the game and say, "Hey, do you mind if I have your number? Because, you obviously put in a pretty good game and it's good to talent kind of recognises talent." So I'm interested, Dean. Like, is that something that you ever did when you grew up and play sport? Did you ever kind of play Guernseys or anything like that?
No, nothing. That wasn't really popular when I was playing sport. I mean, I only stopped playing cricket a few years ago, but there's not much to local cricket, you own a sock and watch. I suppose it's a bit of a interesting one with the women's because you don't know what's underneath the jumper. So,
oh my god, I didn't even think about that. That's so funny.
I mean, I've got sports bars and stuff like that, but
I didn't. Yeah, I didn't even click there to be honest.
The men's don't do it either. So yeah,
no, which I always thought was odd because I think the last one that I saw is someone asked for, I think it was before Gary Ablett came back, but I'm pretty sure like Guthrie asked for Gary Ablett's number when he was at Gold Coast or something. I could just, I don't know, I feel like if I was like running around and I was maybe like a Kane Turner and I was playing on, Joel Selwood or maybe who won the Brownlow this year, Lachie Neale. If you're a Kane Turner and you're still getting a game, why wouldn't you go up to a Lachie Neale and ask for his Guernsey and see if you can flog it on Facebook Marketplace afterwards?
It's not a bad suggestion, I think.
I think game recognised game, sometimes that can be a really good thing. I think the last time I saw it at North with it, maybe I could be making this up, whether Archer and James Hurd traded jumpers. I could be wrong there. I could be very wrong. But
I can't remember that one. I know the girls sometimes when they play a game, like I don't know if it's a special game or anything like that, that they do the auction for the jumpers, which you can buy online. I tried to get Sarah Wright's a couple of weeks ago when they did the auction, and I missed out on that. So so which is a good thing for supporters. And,
yeah, it's great. Yeah. It's great that it goes to the club. It's great that the girls do that as well. I think actually I saw how crazy. I think someone paid $70K for Nick Dacos's grand final jumper. That's insane to me. I mean, A, surely it's not the real one because surely the player actually keeps it. And B, $70K for a jumper. And these cost of living, that's crazy. That is absolutely crazy. Anyway, I've gotten really, really off topic here, Dean, and I apologise for that. I do that quite often.
Well, good. I got sucked into it a bit myself. Any team changes? We'll go back to the game.
I doubt so. Like, you know, unchanged. Everyone's kind of fit and raring to go. So I think consistency is kind of key. No one really to bring in. Like I said, you feel for the girls on the sidelines. But, don't fix what's not broke, I guess, at this stage. Are you kind of on the same wavelength?
Yeah, no, I think we're pretty settled at the moment. There's no one that's really that out of form that you can sort of, we've got, a Considine or a Charlie Granville or Hannah Bailey that has to come in or anything like that. So, yeah, unfortunately, those girls keep missing out each week, which makes it a bit tough. So, yeah, we just, unless there's injuries, they're probably not going to get too many opportunities over the course of the season, which makes it tough. Yeah. A 10-round season. Final prediction for the game?
Yeah, North by about 34 points. I think it'll be, we'll hold Port to about, maybe 3 goals. It's probably been a bit optimistic. But, I think we'll do them by a bit. And I think King might chip in with 3. I'd love to see Gavala's getting the scoreboard. I'd like to see the small forwards do a bit of damage. North by about 34 points. What about you?
Yeah, about 45, I think. Yeah. It would probably be a little bit similar to the Carlton game.
Yeah.
Where they'll just drop numbers behind the ball. We'll probably end up kicking like 55 points and they might get a goal or two or something like that, and that'll be about it. At the moment we're conceding on average about 17 points a game or something like that.
So yeah.
Very, very stingy defence we have at the moment. We'll talk a little bit about the men's since it is a trade season. It officially opened today. Brady Rawlings was on trade radio. Claire, I'm scared. Rawlings scares me a little. We've seen Carlton say they want more for Zach Fisher than pick 42. I don't think he's worth any more than that because he has a value of around $500,000 a year with 2 years left. That to me is a lot of money for a player who can't get in the best 22 or 23. If that's the case, I don't think we have to go crazy chasing him. I think the offer is more than fair. The problem I see is that teams see us with those assistance picks and they think they'll get them and we'll just cave. That's what scares me. Even Stevens from the Swans, they're saying he's worth more than an early third rounder. I'm a little worried, Claire. Are you at all worried about what Rawlings is going to do?
I am because... much as I love Brady, he does concern me. It is interesting that those picks and the assistance package and even the Ben Mackay kind of conversation with Compo, it's put up a bit of a spotlight on North, and I feel like everyone's just kind of going in and like, well, you got these many picks, you can do whatever you want. And it's just not the case. They need to be used quite constructively to build a team around Wardlaw and Sheasel and LDU. So I'm in agreement to you, and I really hope that Brady holds strong. I don't think Zach Fisher is worth, he's a decent, he's not done anything wrong, but like you said, 500K and they want something more than 42, you know, then keep him and he can play VFL. that's kind of fine by me. Even with Dylan Stevens as well, I see the potential and I think he's got a bit of a ceiling. Like I know that there's a lot there, but yeah, I think all the talk, all the conversations and a lot of the understanding is that, you know, that maybe North have a massive wallet full of draft picks. And that I think, you know, some clubs are taking the piss with that. It's incredibly interesting that, you know, you look at how clubs and I guess how people operate and, you know, some is in good faith, some is in bad faith. But I'd hope that Brady does the best thing by the club by, ensuring that we don't go for, don't trade away high draft picks for potential of a Dylan Stevens or a Zach Fisher. They're not, key cogs in a premiership window, premiership kind of making of a team. Like, yeah, they'll be handy. That'd be good. But I don't think it's a make or break situation. Are there types of players that are going to make the difference and make our, three win season into a six win season? No, I don't think so. I don't think so at all. So I think it's about playing the long-term game with those picks and strategically using them to rebuild North Melbourne Football Club. But I guess, how did you feel by seeing Goldie in the official black and red today, Dean?
Oh, it made me sick. No, I'm not going to lie about that. That just looks disgusting. Yeah, it just doesn't suit him. It doesn't suit anyone. But it is what it is, I guess. Obviously, you're pretty similar to me in those thoughts.
Yeah, look, I got flashbacks of Daniel Wells at Collingwood, of Drew Petrie at West Coast. It didn't go down a treat. It's an odd, I guess it's Brad Scott all over. It's just another bizarre Brad Scott move, and he's playing 4D chess now at a different club at Windy Hills Bowl Club. So, yeah, lots to kind of play out in this trade period. I still am very unsure about this whole Harley Reid. Are they going to go for them? Are they not? Are West Coast being coy? I just have no read on the situation. Well, that's ironic. I have no read on the Harley Reid situation. What's your read on the whole thing? Do you think North will scale up and hand draft picks over to West Coast for the number one, or what's your gut feel?
I have a feeling they will. They're talking it down, and I think it's probably going to be overs, to be honest with you. I think we've complicated things by winning that last round by the looks of it. And, at this stage, they're talking about, pick 10 from the Bulldogs today, who made a trade for pick 4, trading pick 14 and a future first. And I'm thinking, Jesus, that's a lot just to go up 4 spots. Yeah. But they think they're going to use that pick 10, like a pick 2 or pick 3 and pick 10 to go to 1. I don't think we're that desperate. We need another midfielder. I think it's an area of I don't watch under 18s competitions or anything like that, so I don't know how good this kid is. I've just heard and watched a few YouTube highlights, and people rave about him. There's no doubt about that. But we've got other needs, and you can get a Daniel Curtin, key position player. I'd love to get Nick Watson, but it doesn't look like we're interested in him. It sounds like he's going to the Bulldogs.
I did think that as well. I thought Nick, I'm similar. I don't have that many tabs on the under-18s competition. I've just heard the hype about Harley Reid. I tend to agree with you. I don't know necessarily we need another mid, especially if we're going to have pay overs for him. And, ever since we got Jason Horne-Francis, I've been scarred for the number one pick. I don't want it. I don't want the pressure. I think the ball is in West Coast court here. Like, as in, do they go homegrown talent who's not a flight risk and go Curtin, and then it falls into our laps, pick 2, ideally, and we take Reid? Because I'm not sure I want to leverage that deal. So I'd be more leveraging with West Coast that, if you take Harley Reid, this is a massive flight risk. You're still a bottom club. You've got to prove to this kid in the next 2 years why he should stay in this midfield. So I just think that there's a lot of complexities that come with the draft now that maybe 10 years ago wouldn't have happened. And what I mean by that is, players openly, I think it was like Archie Perkins a couple of years ago saying to the AFL draft, no, just keep me home, keep me in Victoria. So it's definitely compromised. We definitely understand that. And I think there's so much risk in taking, a Victorian-based club player, who I think he's rural Vic as well, away from home in a bottom club that probably, you look at West Coast, that they will be. It's not like they're going to have a massive trajectory and go from, 18th to playing finals in 2 years. So I think there's a lot more currency that North have, and I hope that Rawlings knows how to play with that, because I don't think... It's a pretty stacked draft. So if we don't get Reid, there's still a lot of talent in there. I don't mind Riley Sanders from that academy. I think there's still a lot in there. I don't think we necessarily have to go all guns blazing and pay overs for Harley Reid. especially when we've got, you know, quite a, you know, when I say deep midfield, at the moment it's not deep in terms of there's talent in there. It's just building and I guess fostering the talent. So, yeah, I don't know how to feel about that one. It's the traderadio.com is just constantly, or I try to stay away from it, but being a teacher who teaches a lot of young men who love AFL, they're always pipping up and kind of telling me about which trade's happening, what's happening here. So I tell them, as long as North Melbourne's, you know, not involved, I don't care. Let's move on with the lesson. So hopefully we don't pay overs, because we've been burnt at the draft before, and I don't really want to be burnt again, Dean. I have no interest in that.
Yeah, no, ideally you don't want to be, but, yeah, look, we'll see how it all plays out. Did you see the comments from Harley Reid about Jason Lefrancis last year? He was on, I think it was the Gettable podcast, and he sort of said, he sort of had a go at him for leaving after 1 year when it's only a 40-minute plane ride to Adelaide to go to see his family. So I kind of grew respect for him for saying things like that. So maybe, look, he's even said, he said, look, I'm happy to, you know, if I have to go to Western Australia, he's happy to try it. So, yeah and good on him. I think West Coast need him more than probably anyone, because they've got pretty ordinary midfielder and an aging midfield without Luke Shuey there and a number of others. So if I was West Coast, I'd give it a try. If it doesn't work, you might get a Chris Judd, you know, for 7-8 years. And
yeah, that's true. And then
might win your premiership and then you go home.
That's actually very – and I guess there have been, you know, a lot of – Luke Shuey is a Vic-based player. There's been success at the club. There's the right people to set up. I mean, it's the biggest club in the land in terms of membership numbers, and they've got a great support base. And maybe he has a head on his shoulders that kind of dictates that, you know, I'm happy to play wherever. I just want to play footy. So, I mean, that would be good to see. I think that's the ideal situation. In an ideal draft, no matter where you come from, you're prepared to move and live out your childhood dream. So, look, either way, I wish him good luck. He's been interesting to kind of like, you know, everyone kind of providing highlights and packages. He seems like it's going to be a fantastic talent. And ideally, I was just going to say, does North game or not? I'm still undecided. I still don't know whether. I think I'll just let Twitter decide. I'll get up and if we get him, I'll be hyped up and excited. If we don't, I'll be like, whatever. Bigger fish to fry, you know?
Exactly right. Yeah, I mean, look, at the end of the day, we've got to trust Rawlings. He's going to make the smart decision here. So, yeah, we'll sort of see how we go. And I guess the last bit of news is Ben McKay. I don't think we're going to match. It sounds like it's pretty close to pick three. I don't understand, Claire, how this hasn't been decided, the conversation. They obviously know the contract offer. Are they just sitting in a, you know, in a boardroom, Gil McLaughlin and all that, I don't know what they're doing, but deciding what we should get for him and just guessing what we should get for him.
Yeah, it's kind of like throwing darts at a board, isn't it, at this point? Yeah. I mean, there's a compensation, there's the formula that exists, and we saw the formula kind of play out today with Tom Duday from the Crows worth basically pick 19, which I think people raised their eyebrows at. I don't think Adelaide supporters got pretty quiet on that one, which is interesting. I don't know. Pick three, move on, daylight robbery. And if he's – a lot of supporters think, you know, if his foot is out of the door, let him go. He's been out of the club since the start of the season. So if he doesn't want to play, he needs to leave. I would agree, although I'd want to be signing up a Nick Haynes. I think we signed up there, some South Australian key backman, 25-year-old.
Toby Pink.
Yeah, Pink. That's good. That's a good name.
From Glenelg. I can't tell you much about him, Claire. No. But he will still need, as far as we know, a key position defender. Look at his stats, and key position defenders don't get big possessions anyway. I think he only got possessions a game. But apparently a good one-on-one player, and will still need. So a good, yeah, he can take the number one forward. So
That's what we do, don't we? With McKay kind of leaving, with Logue not probably coming back till mid-season, I still have my eyes set on Nick Haynes. I wouldn't mind paying 40 or 50% of his salary to kind of plug a hole down there. I know he's 31, it just alleviates a bit more. I think from a North perspective in 2024, I think obviously it's important to build off those three wins, but I think making sure that we don't leak as many goals and give away, you know, the scoring opportunities that we did in 2023. So I'd like to see a more stable back line. You're in shit when you're kind of craving, you know, Scott McMahon and the Scooter Thompson and the Ferrito days when you're looking at the key backs. So I'm hoping we get Nick Haynes, and I'm hoping this pink bloke comes along. I know Callum Dawson got a 1-year contract, which is good, and obviously yeah. You've got Core down there as well. But yeah, I just a little concerned about that, but hopefully things pan out. And if Ben wants to go play at Essendon, then all power to him. See you later, mate. On your bike.
No, that's it. You move on pretty quickly. He's got a good offer for you from the Bombers. And, yeah, we do have the ability to match if we don't get pick 3 and we can force a trade. Or we keep him. Simple as that. So, we'll see how we go. Well, Claire, you want to add anything else before I let you go?
Yeah, look, I just hope to see North supporters of the game on Sunday. Hope to get around the girls. Big game. Hopefully, they put on a bit of a show. It's patient. It's patient with North Melbourne. Obviously, we hope a lot of scoring. Hopefully, are you going to be able to get to the game, Dan?
Oh, I'll be there. Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah, hopefully we can catch up.
Yeah, absolutely. I need to get. I tell you what, the only thing I don't like about Arden Street, if anyone listening, it's lack of parking. It takes me an hour to get a park. So. Hopefully 1 o'clock and a nice win on Sunday. So double wins on Sundays would be fantastic.
Yeah, definitely. I always park at Woolies at the shopping centre and just walk up. So, spend the $8 or something. Yeah, spend the $8. I can't be bothered driving around this way. I don't have a
park. I probably will too, to be honest, because it just does my head in. I end up just going every street. I mean, it's nice for the first 20 minutes, you know, looking at the beautiful streets of North Melbourne, then, you know, I'm like, I've got to get to the game. So that's our tip. Woolworths, $8. It's worth the hit.
Yeah, definitely is. Well, Claire, it's a pleasure to have you on. I'm sure I'll have you on back next week. Hopefully Rawlings hasn't done anything stupid in that time. So
fingers crossed.
Fisher or something like that. So
Fingers crossed.
Yeah, we'll see how we go.
Thanks very much for your time tonight. Really appreciate it.
No, thanks for coming on, Claire. Really appreciate it as well. And I'll chat to you soon.
So thank you very much to Claire Cozzi for coming on once again. And thank you very much to all you lovely listeners for all the likes, retweets, and comments you all put out for the show. It's much appreciated. If you can leave a rating and review on your favorite podcast platform you use as well, that would be awesome. So I'll probably be back either Wednesday or Thursday. There'll be a little bit to talk about with the men's program. I don't know if any trades is going to happen in the next few days. So, yeah, look out for that. But there'll be plenty of news. I mean, it's already ramping up. A lot of rumors, a lot of bullshit as well. So I'll definitely look to get another podcast out this week and talk a little bit about that. Anyways, that's it for tonight. So tonight, I will leave a shout out to the Further North podcast, who's on X as well. So give him a follow at Further North Pod. And that's it. Bye for now, and go Roos.